He does it! The greatest night in the history of Chelsea Football Club.
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
Occasion Mourinho on the pitch, followed by Wenger. And it's not often you see this serious an outbreak of disorder in such a big game.
Hello and welcome to Red and Blue, the Arsenal and Chelsea podcast based in Cape Town. And let me just start off by welcoming Richard Bolland on my left.
Hi.
Arsenal fan and pin dropper. And Nick Key and Jeremy Westwood, Chelsea fans.
Hello.
Hello.
Guys, it's been a very interesting week.
Goodness.
But we're going to start off with the unbelievable goal. Ooh. And this is a game based on truth and lies, where the contestant has to give us an essay which contains five truths, but the rest of it is all lies.
All rubbish.
All rubbish. So I think...
And how does the scoring system work?
Well,
this?
You know, if we guess one of the truths,
yes,
then we get a point.
Okay.
But if they manage to sneak them past us,
yeah,
then they get points.
And if we guess... If we think that something's a truth, but it's actually a lie, then
we lose
points.
A point. Yeah, okay. That's correct.
Unbelievable.
The goal of this game.
Yeah. So, Bolt, do you want to go first?
Absolutely. Thank you, Andrew. Kind words.
I'm just going to pick up
your
pen.
Are you going to keep score?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Sure. My theme for this week is the fans. English football struggles to find supporters, with barely anyone attending matches. In 1993, only five people attended a match between Wolverhampton Wanderers and Everton, two of which were cleaning staff who only watched for 15 minutes of the first half before continuing with their duties. Soon things did change, and now we see millions of supporters watching from all over the globe.
Truth?
Yeah, that is true.
I mean,
relative to that thing.
It's a broad statement.
Very broad.
One point does.
Fans have a tendency to bring very unusual things into football stadiums. Begin list. several Arsenal fans have been banned for bringing guns into the Emirates.
Gunners.
A Man City fan was banned for bringing dead chickens.
True.
Ooh. Is true.
Gotta pull the trigger on something.
Yeah.
That is correct,
right? What?
Yay!
A Manchester City fan was banned in 1995 for bringing dead chickens into City's main road ground. He apparently used to celebrate City's goals by swinging the birds around his head.
Jeez, what a freak.
Dick.
Okay.
Wow.
And three eagles have been confiscated and handed over to animal welfare when fans try to bring them into a Crystal Palace match.
Oh, no. Okay, carry on.
There are some incredible diehard fans out there. Most notably, Eric Duvangar.
Just going to say Eric.
Eric Duvangar, who has been to every Rangers FC game since 1991.
Beep.
A total of...
Okay, finish your sentence.
A total of 1,000,000 games. A total of 715 games.
I'm going to say that's true.
It is not true.
Duvangar.
I purposely wrote a name that I wouldn't be able to pronounce.
Childish.
Man, the layers of sneakiness.
Yeah.
Close behind him was Fred Cope, Congleton's FC's oldest fan, who walked into the ground while they were giving him a minute of silence for his death.
True.
Correct.
Yes!
That's true. I got the... In 1993, HFC Loans League team Congleton were forced to call off a minute's silence to mourn the death of the club's oldest fan when he walked into the ground.
That is awesome.
Oh, man.
Fans tend to make up the most hilarious and ridiculous chants at football matches. There's a chant that goes, "Your teeth are offside, your teeth are offside. Luis Suarez, your teeth are offside."
That probably is true. I wouldn't be surprised.
That is correct,
Jim. Yeah.
That actually, on a Ulala Fantasy League poll, that ranked fifth for being the best chant. Manchester United fans singing about Liverpool forward Luis Suarez's large ganaches.
Ganaches. Oh, man.
It's like...
And another one goes, "You've got murder on your face, you big disgrace, kicking the ball all over the place. Raheem, Raheem, darling." And lastly...
If you made that up, that is so weird.
And lastly, "Sweet William, da, 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 your goals never seem so good."
Never heard
them
sing
that.
Yeah, that's good.
Leicester... have the biggest online fan base in the world with 62,000 registered members. But that is nothing compared to Blackburn fans, who broke the record for the highest attended match when they played Man United in 2007.
Hold on.
Andrew, I'm going to say, I'm just jumping in there.
Okay.
Jumping in ahead of you.
Okay. That is correct.
Yes.
They do have I twisted around a little bit. It was actually Manchester United to have the record, but I thought that would be too obvious. So it was played at Man United, but it was Blackburn versus Man United in 2007. Do you want to know the total? It was only 76,398 people. I thought it would be a lot more.
Mm. Yeah, when they used to have the standing sections, you could squeeze people in there. Mm.
Most of Arsenal's online fan base exists in Ivory Coast, where Arsenal legend Emmanuel Boué comes from. fans sometimes try to get on the field when they're not allowed. In 2006, a match between Germany and Austria, a fan entered the field and attempted to kick the ball, but instead missed, slipped over the ball, broke his leg. He then tried again with his other foot, missed, and broke that leg too. In a game between Spurs and Swansea, a streaker scored a winning goal, which was awarded, and saw Swansea get relegated. The last fact that I'm about to give is that a fan managed to get into an official Man United photo by impersonating Eric Cantona.
No, okay, wait. I'm buzzing on that. I'm sure the guy did manage to get into a Man United photo. I'm not sure if he was intending to impersonate Cantona. But I know there's a guy who jumped into a photo at some point in full kit.
Dude, yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
That is correct.
Yeah!
He was an unemployed man called Karl Power who managed to evade security guards at Germany's Olympic Stadium to pose in a full United away strip alongside the team for the official UEFA pre-match photo.
That's so great.
And apparently this guy has done it several other times in other... like sports, like he's been seen at Wimbledon and the Olympics and other things.
I've seen him like warming up or something on like a tennis. Yeah, like I'm sure I've seen him in things. He's like all these YouTube videos about it.
He's been banned for life from Old Trafford.
That's so funny. Jeez, I'd give him like a season ticket pass just for the ball. That's amazing.
And that there concludes my lecture.
Oh, wow.
I managed to smuggle zero truths.
Good work.
Past you guys. But I think I did get a few... I think I got one person who guessed something incorrectly.
Yeah, there's so many great ones in there.
Well, okay. I'll go back to my mischievous ways next time.
It's more fun for us if you don't. All right, are you guys ready?
Yep.
My one is not themed, but it is football. All right. Football is a man's sport. And as such, in America, no women are permitted to put on studded boots without the written consent of their father, husband, or a government official. Rather surprisingly then, only two men have ever won the World Cup while sporting either a bald head, a full beard, or protruding chest hair.
Beep on the full beard?
That is correct.
Yes!
Wow, I can't believe you picked that out.
Claimed.
Man, okay, so the story behind that is that only two men have ever won a World Cup while sporting a full beard, and they were Sergio Batista in 1906. No, and Gattuso in 2006. Only two players. I was surprised to find. But I also thought Pirlo, but he always shaves for World Cups. It is also a tiring sport, whereby players run the equivalent of two marathons every four matches, although curiously, only have control of the ball for about 200 meters of running per match on average. This control of the ball, however, can quickly turn into the currency of football. That is, goals. Some are better than others at this task, and because of this, are noticed early. At the young age of 13, Ronaldo scored every goal for his side in an 18-4 victory.
That's true.
Ooh,
who gets it?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Bol made murmurings first.
Well, in my attempt at looking at facts last night, I came across the fact that Ronaldinho had scored like 23 goals. And like I imagine maybe Ronaldo's done the same, or you've just twisted that fact into trying to sell a lie. So I'm not...
I'm happy to give it to both you and Jim. Because it's wrong.
So then you twisted that fact then.
Yeah.
Okay. Ronaldo scored every goal for his side in 18-4 victory, while Ronaldinho, at the same age,
Buzz.
Ben, scored every goal in a 23-0 victory for his side.
Yeah, that, I saw that fact. I'll take that.
You're not getting a point for that. That's the same fact. No one's getting. You both lost.
No, you can pick it out. You can pick it out.
That's all right. I got the second half. I basically end up with nothing.
Buzz dirty.
I end up with nothing because...
Okay.
Oh, and and Brazilian superstar Kaká put 28 goals past the opposing team while he was 10 years old. No. Not going to take it? Fine. Not even death can separate some fans from the sport that they love. One Mexican fan's final wish was to be buried under his favorite team's pitch, directly under the center circle, in order to haunt opposing teams.
Like, Mexican fans are crazy.
Sorry for our Mexican podcast listeners out there.
I'll say that's true.
It is not true. Sorry. A Spanish fan would sprinkle the ashes of his father, a lifelong fan of the club Malaga, onto the pitch before every match for 8 years until he ran out of ashes.
And some I'm gonna come in on that.
Okay. It is not true.
That's impossible.
That's a lot of ashes.
Even if you took like half a teaspoon of ashes, I think you would still run out within the year.
And some Colombian men brought their recently deceased friend's body in an open casket after his funeral to see one last match at his favorite team's home ground.
Yeah. Babe.
Yeah, it must be. If you're putting a fact in every single list, then I'll say that's true.
That is correct. Yeah. That is true.
I went too early.
So many countries with so many quirks, yet England have not fielded a national team without a Liverpudlian-born player in the team since 1983. However, the last time the Netherlands did not have a player with the word van in his name...
Buzz. I gotta let you finish.
...in the match day squad was in 1996 in a friendly with China.
I think that's true. I think the Netherlands have been with the vans all the way.
That is true. And that actually concludes my lecture. Oh, short man. And sweet.
Yeah.
Impactful. I thought that was such a ridiculous fact.
Was the total one, was that a fact?
It was a fact.
I thought it might be.
Yeah.
So how many did you sneak past?
Just one, I think.
The
200 meters one.
So I can reveal that at the end of that, Nick is the winner with 3 points.
Woohoo!
Followed by Bol on 2, me on 1, and Jem on 0.
Clean sheet.
Nice. He's kept a clean sheet.
Well, I think you have. I think you haven't scored any goals. And you've actually conceded about 6.
Yeah.
So in this week's Arsenal news, we've got 2 games to catch up on. The first one was an amazing Villa game, which saw the likes of Welbeck and Ozil come to true form and to regain their title as best footballers in the world. And I couldn't be happier. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was a great way to bounce back. I mean, Aston Villa were suffering from the plague, and so we were basically playing a sickly Aston Villa team.
I bet you that was due to Wenger's strict diet. Villa had like donuts, croissants out there. Wenger was like, you must eat your fruit salad. And, the Chinese,
like,
one.
Yeah. It's like Wenger's in the room.
Can't
do the accent. And so then they stayed away and they were fine.
Yeah, well, whatever it was, Villa weren't playing particularly well, but Arsenal were playing well as well. We can say that for once, that they gelled better together as a team. Ozil was playing mainly through the middle, but, you know, he kind of wanders around a bit. And, got the first goal and then, you know, returned the favour to Welbeck, who scored a nice tap-in.
Well, that was an absolute caviar pass.
Yeah, an amazing pass.
To bend it around those two defenders and get onto Welbeck's foot.
Yeah.
Was that Welbeck's first goal for you?
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
And the following cross from Gibbs, I mean, if I think it was Sissoko, if he hadn't put it in by mistake, the ox was there. AKA, I mean, it was another...
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, it was a great game and it was just so much fun, even though the second half was a massive snooze fest. It was so much fun to be able to watch the second half without absolutely being racked with
just
shame and general fear.
And it was an amazing weekend for Arsenal too, when all
second team Arsenal too
when all 6 teams in the top
6.
Oh.
That was a long way of saying that. Drop points.
All 6 in the top 6. Are you not in the top 6?
Well, besides for us. Yeah. So everyone else in the top 6 dropped. And that was amazing because, I mean, it was. I watched the United Leicester game, which was.
Really?
We'll save that for some of the more general Arsenal news, but yeah, it was. I mean, general football news. Excuse me.
No problem.
Pardon me. Yeah. And it was amazing. I think it was fantastic.
So let's talk quickly about the Southampton game, where we fielded very much Arsenal 2, our B team.
we had 11 changes.
Yeah.
From the Aston Villa game.
Yeah. It was a first start for David Ospina.
Did you guys lose this game?
Yeah.
That's why you're trying to make the point of how many changes you
2-1, yeah.
We lost 2-1.
Yeah, so we played Southampton, and they fielded their first team. This is, you know, the Cup. Capital One Cup. And we started brightly, but we just couldn't get past
them. Sanchez's goal.
Sanchez scored. Oh, I saw that. Haven't seen
free kick.
Phenomenal free kick.
Oh my word!
Like it couldn't get more top corner than it was. But we just couldn't move on from there.
Yeah, I mean, Rosicki had an absolute mare when he came in to try to get that tackle. But
he gave away the pen.
I mean, there was
talking
debates
about him last week, weren't we? When you 2 weeks ago, when you were saying how he needs to bring Rosicki back in. And
absolutely, no. He's normally like phenomenal, and his work rate is incredibly high, and he can break really well. Like he can get the whole team moving forward, but when moving backwards, he's a bit of a liability. It seems.
Yeah, well, I think he's rusty, and I think that guy had, I can't remember who it was, but he had super quick feet. And he basically just pushed the ball away from him as he saw Rosicki coming in and then tripped. And so
Podolski was playing and played the full 90 and was just a bit of a cart horse. I mean, he had one chance which he didn't make. It was a bit of a tricky chance. But, I mean, I love Podolski. I mean, he Instagrammed a photo this week of him in one of these ice baths with Alexis Sanchez.
Yes.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw that.
And said, "It's a little chilly in here."
Oh, this is amazing.
Oh, goodness.
But on the field, he's definitely rusty.
I'll be surprised if
that's a good joke for a German, like, first language speaker to make.
Yeah, it is.
That's a good pun.
I'll be surprised if he does manage to escape the transfer window this coming summer.
I think I'm feeling more and more ready to go, but I'm, you know, that's conjecture. Yeah, and we're looking forward to a good old North London derby at the weekend.
Wait. It's actually the best time we could have ever played this.
Yeah.
The Spurs are absolutely rubbish at the moment. We're on form.
Yeah.
Are you playing away or at home?
Playing at home, I think.
Okay. I can check that and get back to you. Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. I think we'll win regardless.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, well, moving on to Chelsea news. Did you see the games, Jez?
I watched, yes. I did watch all of them. The Bolton game, I missed some of the first half.
Okay.
But I was watching the shot count go up and up and up on my text feed.
It was ridiculous. I very rarely see a game where a team is so summarily dominated as we dominated Bolton. And the scoreline of 2-1 is just not reflective
not at all.
Of that whatsoever. We also had, I think, 10 changes from the team that played Man City on the weekend. Pretty but, I mean, that still included some pretty...
One was only a side change, because Azpilicueta
and Cahill were
the two, but Azpilicueta moved back to the right-hand side.
So 9 changes.
You meant he went over to Bolton.
Just turned him out for the week.
Yeah. But, I mean, that still meant that, I mean, Cech was starting, and that's, like, incredible that he's your second-choice keeper. Oscar was starting, and Salah. We still had a pretty strong squad out there.
Yeah.
Schürrle. And Schürrle, I couldn't get over. I mean, you may not have seen this if you missed the first bit of the first half, but it was almost like the right back who was meant to be marking him was just like, no thanks, no. He had all the space, almost from the halfway line to the byline, and up until the box. That entire quadrant,
just
no one was in there. Of their defense, he was just kind of walking, going like his hands were up constantly, just giving the ball. And because of that, he had, I think, at the end of the game, he had like 13 shots just on his own. Yeah. Chelsea had 30 shots. I mean, it was those kind of numbers
bizarre.
And also, honestly, that keeper Andy Lonergan, he made some ridiculous saves, fingertip saves. I think he did fingertip saves 3 times onto the post, onto the bar.
Yeah.
Off a free kick, off a shot, he stepped that shot from Nathan Aki. It's like one of those like 40-yard rising shots. he made some incredible saves. And without exaggeration, if that game had gone differently, it could have genuinely have been like a 12-0 or a 12-1. Wow. It was just...
Yeah, it was quite, quite frustrating, actually.
It was frustrating that it was only 2-1. And also, the goals weren't... What was the first goal? Oh, the first goal was Zuma's goal. Yep. Also debut, goal on debut. And then Oscar poking home from just outside the box. But I mean, they weren't phenomenal goals. And it was just was really frustrating because it felt like one of those games where they might snatch an equaliser in like the last minute. And now we're like, oh, how did this happen after we so...
Yeah.
But onto the bigger news.
Oh, yes.
Unless you've got something else.
I was going to say, it was nice to see Aki playing.
Yes.
He
played really well, actually. Oh, and I saw a stat. They were talking about Zuma.
Is Aki an abbreviation for something?
No. His surname is Aki. Nathan Aki.
Ah.
But they said that our new 19-year-old centre-back, Kurt Zuma, he's like an absolute beast machine. He's just enormous. He's got the biggest head of any man I've ever seen.
And the biggest jump.
Yeah, that's the point. That's what I was going to say, is that he had...
Is there a shower sticking out top of his head?
It looks like it, yeah. They've got a still frame of him jumping for the corner just before he ended up scoring, because he misses it and it goes to Cahill, rebounds, and he just pokes it home. But they said he had about a 30 inch vertical jump, because his legs are out straight, they're not curled up. 30 inch vertical jump, and they said that falls into like NBA category of like how, and he's a big boy. So it's surprising for that someone as big as him could actually jump that high. So he's going to be quite a threat on corners, I think.
And also learns to jump that high, because I think often the big players,
they just think
motorcycle or whatever, they don't actually learn to jump because they can just nod at home when they're younger.
Exactly.
So they never actually learn the skill. So that's quite a nice thing.
Yeah, so that's going to be cool. But onto the bigger Chelsea news. Flip, what a game on Sunday, the Chelsea-Man City game. Laying down early marker for the rest of the season. I said before the game, happy to take a draw. Away at City, defending champions, you don't expect to go there and win. You expect that if you do, it's going to be a good game for you, but you kind of expect to get a draw if you're lucky. I think it was unfortunate that we didn't win.
Yeah, in the end after the
Because of the red card for Zabaleta and the great goal. I just think it was a mistake by Schürrle and Ivanovic together combined
to
let them in, and what a heartbreaking moment. To see old Frankie now. And after, I have to eat my words from last week and say, I'd love to see Lampard on because he's not going to do anything.
Oh, man, that was funny.
Ends up being the guy to score the equaliser. Heartbreaking moment. But, I mean, even as neutral fans, well, not neutral fans, because you're not really neutral, but as outside fans, what was your take on the way that the Chelsea fans still responded to him?
Okay, first of all, I did watch the Man City Chelsea game. The only way I can describe it is, I don't know if you've watched the movie Pacific Rim, where basically it's two oily giants fighting each other until one of them dies of boredom. it wasn't that bad, but
It's a surprisingly apt description considering we're both owned by oil.
That was the joke. So, I think that you guys really should have put the game to bed.
Yeah.
I mean, you had it, you know, and you had the red card in your favour.
Costa hit the post as well.
Costa was firing slightly off. And, I don't know. It was actually quite an exciting game.
It was a stressful game towards
the end. And, man, you couldn't have written it.
You couldn't have.
It was amazing.
But honestly, so my question to you was, for the fans, I think I've never seen it that, you know, fans have sung so loudly about an ex-player playing for another team.
Yeah.
And even when he scored the goal, it just made them sing louder for him.
I mean, I think it's a different situation because he wasn't sold to another Premier League club. He was sold to an overseas club, and he's just been brought here. It's like almost against his... You could see it.
Yeah.
The fans seeing it is against his will, almost, that he's playing for Man City. And he was incredibly respectful in the way that he didn't really celebrate the goal and that he cheered on the fans at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So you've got to really give him credit for the way that he
Frankie will always be a club legend. There's like very little he can do, I think, besides just coming out and saying he hates Chelsea and therefore the fans.
He could do a Nasri and just basically destroy his whole reputation at a club.
Yeah.
And then make fans hate him. And then complain that the fans boo him every time.
This is Bobby's dream.
I don't think that'll happen. I hope that will never happen. But yeah, you know, at the same time, he has a job to do.
Yeah.
He's a professional footballer. Yeah. I would be bleak with him if he was a chop and, you know, like he didn't do his best for whatever club he was playing for.
And I think it would have hurt more if it was to make it 2-1.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Like a lot more. And the fact that it was...
Well, he had that long range effort that I was like...
Yeah.
He's known for his long... Oh, yeah. Goodness me. That would have been terrible.
But I was seeing that it's potentially his last game for Man City could be against us again.
No ways.
I think it's on the 30th or the 31st of January.
Oh, no.
So
it could be an interesting one. What did you think of Pellegrini's little chirps?
This guy. He's an idiot. He is such... Nobbin.
This is coming from the people who were talking about little horses, and now he's saying you are a small team.
Yeah, there's a big difference between
us. Last season.
You were not little horses last season. You came, whatever, third.
Yeah.
The little horse was not ready to run with the two big horses.
Okay, my greatest part of this is that Pellegrini comes in and he just always has to say something. He said something after the game with you guys. You know, he made excuses. Now he's making excuses again, saying, oh, this is what I don't understand. Maybe because I support a team.
This is the same as Mourinho. Mourinho does exactly the
same. Mourinho is intentionally cheeky, though.
Yeah, but so why can't Pellegrini?
Because listen to this. If you say, this team just comes here to not play football. They just want to defend. So we can't score goals. So this is not
that
fair.
That is one of your tactics.
But that is the very point of that whole argument. It is a tactic. It's a footballing tactic. So if what does he want us to do? To just come there and be like, oh, please score loads of goals so that you can win and then you'll be happy, because we don't want to upset old Mr. Pellegrini.
Anyway, I think that's ridiculous. I thought it was very funny.
The funniest part about that is that Mourinho now, for the third time, has intentionally mispronounced his name. So whenever, because people keep asking Mourinho about what did you think of his comments, and he goes, "Oh, this Pellegrino." he always loves to talk about all the stuff. So he does it intentionally, and it's just such a subtle, cheeky barb trying to get back at him. I love it. It's the greatest part about it.
I think the game of the weekend, though, was Leicester versus Man United. And I fortunately watched that game and saw the delight on United's face. I saw the Facebook statuses coming out
just flooding
at halftime. Like, this is the United back, you know. Yeah. What a goal, Di Maria. Oh, my gosh.
This is the new dawn.
Heart, heart, Di Maria, heart, heart. And then just the... Okay, fair enough. It was a terrible refereeing decision to give that penalty. Should have been a foul... Like outside the box, too.
There's no dispute on that. But I also heard someone say, if you're a good enough team, that shouldn't stop you.
And that wasn't that.
It wasn't even
that. Wasn't even the equalizer.
Yeah,
that was just for them to go 3-2.
So people love to use that as the excuse. But I think
if you're still going to see the three more goals,
you're still going to see three more goals. And if you're also wanting to be a team that is going to do anything at all, you've got to be able to have character in those situations, because things won't go against you, but things will often go for United. And I think United fans are just not used to having the refs always just give them the benefit of the doubt.
Fergie time. But it was case in point that you can spend as much as you like on five of the world class striking forces ever, but if you don't have a defense, you're gonna suffer.
No one in this league looks like they have defense. This is like the highest scoring league I've ever seen so far.
So that was amazing. Liverpool versus West Ham was a lol.
Oh well, yeah, that one, yes.
That was funny. Spurs lost, which was incredible. because their next game is against us, so they're gonna be down now. I think Everton drew, didn't they? Awesome,
no, Everton. They lost 2-3 to Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that's right. So they also lost.
City and Chelsea dropped points.
So everyone,
I'm happy to drop points against City at away at City.
Yeah. Everyone dropped points except the Gooners, who got all three. So we're very happy with this last weekend.
Yeah. But I think sorry, just to go back to that whole points thing. I think Mourinho said it well afterwards, just saying like, you know, at the beginning of the weekend, we were in first place, 2 points ahead of second place. We've come to the home of the defending champions. We've gotten a point, and we finished the weekend still in first place and 3 points ahead of second place. That's a good weekend for us.
It's true. I mean, I think that our opinion of Man City can be tempered slightly since their recent performances. They lost their first Champions League game, as did we, and as did kind of everyone. I don't know what you guys
drew.
Yeah, you drew. I mean, they drew to us at home, and of course we beat them in the Community Shield. Let's not forget that. Very important.
The biggest game.
Silverware.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe they're going to find their form, but at the moment they're kind of on par with the top teams.
Yeah.
They're not like extremely far ahead of us. No. So
can I just say that Mangala kid that they've brought looks ridiculous.
He's a beast.
He is. He's the scariest man I think I've ever seen in my life. It basically looks like an NFL linebacker has just decided to all of a sudden switch sports and just play centre back for Man City. Goodness.
So the other game this week that was quite an interesting one was the, I don't know if any of you saw it, the Liverpool-Middlesbrough Cup for One Cup.
Oh, yes. Goodness, yeah.
That went all the way down to penalties.
Well, I actually caught the last 15 minutes. What a great
two game. Chelsea loanies having some influence in that game and in goal and scoring some penalties.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it might be interesting to look at some penalty stats, have a look at and see how that works. Just an interesting one. So that penalty, that game went to 30 penalty kicks in total afterwards. Do you know what, did anyone know what the record is?
I remember actually thinking about this in the World Cup.
No,
during the World Cup. I remember.
No, it's like a club game from Nigeria. Or from Namibia.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So I remember, I'm saying during the World Cup, I remember asking... thinking during the penalty shootout, what is the highest penalty shootout? I remember also Namibian Cup.
I'll say 35.
No, it was like 49 or something.
Ooh, okay, 48.
Yeah,
48. KK Palace beat Civics 17-16 on penalties in 2005 for the Namibian Cup. Which is the record.
Yeah.
But, so that a few years ago, Ben Gurion University did some research into penalties and how they looked at 286 penalties over a few years. I think this is in-game penalties rather than penalty shootouts.
Yeah.
And looking at when they were successful, when they weren't, like what are good strategies. So if you shoot at the goal, you score about 85% of the time. So the other 15% it's saved. If you shoot off the goal, you don't score 100% of the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a weird...
Surely there's like a 0.0001%
thing where like it's hit the bar, gone up, and then reverse back in.
Maybe. So about where you shoot in the goal.
Mm.
Like if you guys were taking a penalty, where would you shoot?
Well, right. I've played enough PES to know that you go straight down the middle.
Funny enough, that is actually a good tactic at the moment.
I think it's harder to get the goalkeeper to get down. So I would say you shoot bottom corners.
Yeah, okay, that's not a bad idea actually.
Interesting.
Okay.
So, about 57% of people shoot in the bottom half of the goal,
okay.
In the bottom third of the goal,
and
they score there with an 80% success rate.
Yeah, that's good.
But only 13% in the upper third of the goal, but 100% of those goals went in.
100%.
So if you can be accurate enough to shoot in the top of the goal, it's like a guaranteed goal, Jesus, basically. But because it's more risky to shoot higher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the most common is, as you were saying, in the bottom right-hand corners where about 40% of all shots go into either the bottom... is to the lower right-hand corner, actually, more than the lower left-hand corner. So the goalies, most 94% of the time, they jump either left or right, so rather than staying in the middle. But they only save that about... They get the correct direction 40% of the time, which is interesting. It's less than half, I'm guessing. Yeah. And they only save it when they do dive the right way 35% of the time.
Jeez, that's actually such a small percentage.
Which leaves you with only like a 13% saving chance. But if the keeper stays in the center of the goal, they save it 60% of the time.
Wow.
So you've actually got a 33% of saving if you stay in the center of the goal and don't actually move.
Why don't keepers look at these stats?
Because you cover more of the goal.
Wow.
That's very interesting.
But it's a difficult thing because if the keeper always stands in the middle... Then everyone goes, I'll just put it on the side, and it's easy. So you have to mix it up, but they probably should stick in the center a bit more.
Every three, just kind of stay in the middle.
And the keeper may as well dive the opposite way to what he's thinking. Like, 40% save the way you go.
He's going left, I'm going right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, always just start, then just push off on the other corner.
Yeah. And then finally, just some totals over the last, since the beginning of the Premier League to now, there have been 1,665 penalties in games. And interestingly, 63% of those are to the home team.
Oh, wow.
And only 36% or 37% to the away team.
Definitely some refing bias.
So there's some interesting something going on there that it's that big a difference.
Yeah.
I've
got two quick facts, just one Arsenal, one Chelsea, before we end the section. I know I usually like to bring in facts that are detrimental to the picture of Arsenal, but this one's quite a cool one.
Not hard to find.
Yeah. It says, Arsenal are the only team to have received a gold version of the Premier League trophy when it was specially made to commemorate their 2004 Invincibles season.
Sounds about right.
Instead of the silver trophy that every other title-winning team have lifted.
We like to lift goldware, not just silver.
And So I thought that was quite interesting. I mean, because I mean, that is quite an achievement to go an entire season unbeaten. So I thought that's quite a fitting tribute.
Well, maybe that's probably made out of chocolate.
Yeah, just a gold foil.
That's to give them a special trophy that they could keep. We're going to get another one for another number of years.
Brilliant. Yes, I love how you've turned this into a negative. Okay, and then my Chelsea fact is that in the 2012-2013 season, one of our players scored in 7 different competitions in one season.
Wow.
Can you tell me which of our players you think it was that did this?
Frank Lampard.
Not true.
Unlucky.
Yeah.
2012-2013.
Yeah. One of our players scored in 7 different club competitions.
Let's go Torres.
It's Torres!
Hey.
Of all people to do it, it's Fernando Torres. I'm just amazed that he scored 7 goals, let alone in 7 different competitions. But can you tell me, can you try and work out which 7 competitions we played in that season in order for him to be able to do it?
Premier League.
Yeah.
League Cup. FA Cup.
Champions League.
Yeah.
Club World Cup.
That's true.
Community Shield.
That's correct. And there's one more.
And the Super Cup.
No.
The Emirates Cup.
No. It's gonna be confusing because you've said Champions League already.
Oh.
Oh, Europa League.
Europa League.
Yes, because we went out.
He got knocked out after the group stages. So he scored. So just to recap those, he scored in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, the FIFA Club World Cup, the FA Community Shield, the FA Cup, and the League Cup all in one season.
Yeah. It's not possible to get any more.
I don't think so.
The World Cup, maybe.
That's not a club.
That's not a club.
Oh,
club
from
Chelsea.
Okay.
So that's the most. So he actually holds the record for the most competitions. Wow.
Probably always.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time for the quiz.
The quiz!
The quiz!
Beautiful. This quiz is about Premier League firsts, courtesy of The Guardian. So, which team fielded the first all-foreign starting 11 on Boxing Day 1999?
Nick. Arsenal.
Is false.
Man City.
Is false.
Chelsea.
Is correct.
Damn it.
Well done. 1 point to Jem. The next question. Which club had no kit sponsor in the first season of the Premier League? Which club had no kit sponsor in the first season of the Premier
West
League?
West Brom.
Is incorrect.
Liverpool.
Incorrect.
Chelsea.
False. It was Wimbledon.
Wimbledon?
Yeah.
Sponsored by John McEnroe. So.
Okay. Next question is, who was the first player to score 5 goals in a Premier League match? I don't know if this is quite a
Nick,
tricky
Andy
one.
Cole.
Is the right answer.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
And the final question is, who was the first goalkeeper to score a Premier League goal?
Tim Howard.
False.
No.
What? Isn't he quite new?
David Seaman.
No.
Ed De Hoy.
I have heard of this person.
You have?
Yeah, and I'm not very knowledgeable.
Who was it?
Schmeichel, maybe.
Is correct. Yes. Well done. Nick wins on 2 points.
Kasper Schmeichel.
I think it was his dad.
Oh, yeah, not wrong Schmeichel.
Michael Schmeichel.
Oh, and that's the final whistle. Thanks very much, guys, for being with me this week.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thanks for having us in your mansion.
It's an absolute pleasure. You're always welcome. But first, just before we go, any predictions for this weekend?
I predict Arsenal will trump the Spurs, and I'm going to go with a 2-0.
2-0. I hope so. Wow. I hope Riziki belts in another scorcher.
Yeah.
Okay. Chelsea Villa. I think it'll be, if we manage to sort out our defensive problems, I'm going to say 3-0.
3-0.
Yeah, I was also going to go with 3-0 and a 60% chance of rain.
cool. Well, if you guys
what do you
want
predict?
To...
Yeah, you haven't made a prediction.
Oh, I haven't made a prediction. I think we'll beat them 1-0. I think it's going to be a tough game.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you can follow us on the iTunes podcast section, or you can find us on redandblue.podomatic.com. I don't know why I even say that. Nick should just do it. thanks for listening, and we'll chat to you soon.
Yay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.